Good morning. Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here today for the third presentation by Mayor Stephanie Miner, a third annual, I should say. I wanted to make a few announcements, a reminder, of course, about next week's program. We will have Pat Driscoll and Marianne Schmidt-Carey speaking on the Say Yes to Education program. So that's next week. And then the following week, which will be our final TMR program of the season, Peter Dunn of the Community Foundation will be talking about some initiatives and also just about some issues with philanthropy in general. So those are the next 2 weeks. Of course, there are a lot of other things going on. I want to remind you about University College Lemoyne College's Future of Medicine series. That's a two-part series. Starts April 25th, ends up May 2nd. Some cutting-edge issues in healthcare. So we have flyers, and that's on the website. Also want to remind you about the Onondaga Citizens League annual meeting, which will be on Wednesday, June 6th. Keynote speaker is Richard Ravitch. Maybe we'll hear a little bit about Mr. Ravitch today and what he's doing with the City of Syracuse finance advising. And we will be honoring Professor Emeritus Ralph Ketchum. Many of us in the room, no matter how long it's been since we were in college, have taken courses from Dr. Ketchum, who is a great champion of civic education and active citizenry. So that's the OCL annual meeting, and I wanted you all to be among the first to know about that. So, without further ado, it's my pleasure to welcome the 53rd mayor of the City of Syracuse, Stephanie Miner. As you know, she was a two-term councilor at large, was elected first female mayor, Big Five City in New York State in 2009, and we welcome her.
Thank you all very much. I am going to give some remarks that I gave to the council on Monday night. As Sandra said, I was a two-term councilor before I became elected mayor, so 8 years. This is my third budget, so this is my 11th budget. This is the first time that I can recall where a mayor has gone to the council and actually orally presented the budget. Most years, some mayors just kind of threw the budget at the council and said, good luck with this. I didn't do that. There were times I wanted to do that, but I did not do that. So this year, because of the really precarious position that the city finds itself in and the trends that we are in the midst of that show no sign of abating, I thought it would be a good idea to go personally and talk about that and to talk about the context in general, as well as the particular part of the budget. So I presented the council with a budget of $661.9 million. Of that, 296 or 45% of the budget will fund city operations, and 365.9 million or 55% is allocated to the Syracuse City School District. This represents a 4.3% increase on the city side and a 9.5% increase on the school district side. The budget does not include a tax increase or water or sewer rate increases. And while this is a fiscally responsible and sound budget, it puts into place short-term relief in the hopes that and that all of us across the state will work together to try to find long-term solutions to the problems of pensions in particular that threaten to take down all municipalities in New York State. Cities across the United States, I know because you are an educated crowd, cities across the United States, you know, are struggling under this most recent economic recession. From Stockton, California, to Detroit, Michigan, to Yonkers, New York, all of them are teetering on the edge of financial disaster. And in fact, I think before the summer hits us, we will see that list of cities grow longer, and indeed the list that actually do declare bankruptcy grow longer as well. Providence, Rhode Island, which is frequently compared to the city of Syracuse because we share a lot of the same traits, a large institution, a large percentage of educational institutions, and also medical institutions. The mayor of Providence has said that bankruptcy is indeed a real threat within 2 months for that city. The evidence of this fiscal calamity is not only spreading across the United States, but spreading across New York. Outside advisors, including, I now get to say my own Richard Ravitch, last week informed Yonkers that bankruptcy or a control board is imminent. Rochester's mayor, in his financial report to the city, warned that a control board is perhaps 2 years away. And that shocked residents of that city that has long enjoyed fiscal stability. Buffalo is already operating under a financial control board, and Mayor Bloomberg, too, has stated that New York City's ability to provide essential services will eventually be overwhelmed by pension costs. And those are the stories from our fellow Big Five cities in New York State. As if these examples were not enough, we just need to look eastward to see that small cities in New York State are suffering, too. Utica just passed a budget that included a 9.9% tax increase and a reduction of 24 public safety positions, a reduction that the mayor told me he did not know how the city would be able to function and how the fire department and police department would be able to function under these cuts. And as we all know, Syracuse is not immune from this economic crisis or the trends that are impacting the country and the state. In New York State, this epidemic is being fueled by skyrocketing pension costs. To put it in perspective, about 10 years ago, Syracuse's city's pension bill was $2 million. In 2010, it was about $14 million. Last year, we paid $21.1 million, and in the current budget that I presented to the council on Monday night, we have budgeted $30 million for pensions. That is an estimated pension bill. It's an estimate that comes from the comptroller's office. We do not get that final bill until December. So between 2000 and 2010, our pension costs increased 567%. Between 2002 and 2012, they have increased 1,405%. Equally distressing, there does not appear to be an end in sight to these escalating costs. And when I talk about pension costs and the burden that they are bringing to communities across New York State and Syracuse in particular, in the next breath I always say Albany has a responsibility to help us with these pension costs. And they certainly do for a whole host of reasons, but I think the strongest reason is that pension costs are completely and totally dictated by Albany. Albany sets the benefits. Albany sets how old you are to be retired. Albany sets the contribution, or frequently, and in most cases, the lack of contributions. The only thing that municipalities do is pay the bill. This year, as I talk about Albany, the New York State allowed us to accelerate a portion of our state aid through a so-called spin-up program. As a result, we will receive an early payment of $20.9 million during this fiscal year, which will be used exclusively, I have proposed to be used exclusively, for pension costs. Utilizing our spin-up in this manner will allow us to close our projected budget gap and preserve our fund balance. And despite this windfall, we should not be lulled into a false sense of security or complacency. Spin-up is a one-time benefit that essentially buys us time but does not change our trajectory, even in the short term. And other cities have utilized spin-up in a regular manner, and those cities are the ones that are facing financial bankruptcy this year. Yonkers is, quote, all spun up. Utica is all spun up. So there are cities before that have utilized this program. Syracuse has not, to the extent that other cities have, and as a result, we were able to buy ourselves time under this. When I talk about fund balance, it is an exceedingly important concept for all cities because we are all creatures of the market. We use the bond market extensively. And the fund balance is a key indicator of our fiscal health and what the rating agencies look at when they give our bond rating and when they rate our bond ratings. So we have been forced to deplete our fund balance over the past 9 to 10 years because of these increasing and escalating costs. And the rating agencies always cite fund balance as a preeminent factor in maintaining a healthy bond rating. Conversely, as rating agencies have downgraded other municipalities, Yonkers was downgraded in October of 2011, and Utica was just recently downgraded, they cited unacceptable fund balance as a key weakness. And as if that trend were not enough, last year, each of our rating agencies discussed our fund balance as a warning sign. Fitch said, quote, further depletion of the fund balance beyond what is budgeted for fiscal 2012 would drop the city below adequate levels for this rating category. Moody's stated, continued reserve deterioration will pressure the city's creditworthiness. And Standard & Poor's said failure to maintain adequate reserves could put negative pressure on the rating. These ratings are the foundation of what we use to finance our services and our government. We use the bond market routinely to fund capital projects, cash flow, and other services. A downgrade means we would have to pay more for interest and less money on the actual item or the project we are financing. If we were downgraded this year, we have estimated that we, both the school district and the city, will pay approximately $500,000 in additional interest. That's $500,000 that we would not be able to use to pay for fire trucks and snow plows and water mains and police cars and cash flow and all of those other things and classrooms. As fiscal stewards, I told the council it's important to note that in each New York State city that went into a financial control board, it was preceded and precipitated by a poor bond rating. And as I said to them, it is not overstating it to say that as goes the fund balance, so goes our control over Syracuse. Along with pensions, healthcare costs are a key driver of our fiscal unsteadiness as well. Healthcare costs are being pressured by a number of factors: who we are insuring, the growth in costs, and the extraordinarily expensive benefits compared with a small copay. According to experts, Syracuse leads all New York State municipalities in the cost of paying for healthcare for retirees, a whopping $11,200 per capita. Similarly problematic is the fact that we are what is referred to as upside down on our healthcare costs. We are currently covering more retired employees than we are active employees. This is another factor that worries financial regulators. And of course, like everyone else in the United States, we are struggling under the actual cost of healthcare. Our healthcare costs are projected to reach $44.1 million for the budget that I just presented to the council. That's a $2 million increase over the current fiscal year, and it is a level of growth that is simply unsustainable. Now add to that the cost of providing benefits. City employees pay $15 a month or $180 annually currently for a single policy that costs the city $6,310 in premiums. Family coverage currently for city employees costs $30 a month or $360 a year for a policy that costs the city $16,675. As I have said many times before, employees are getting a Cadillac plan while they are paying for Yugo. And I have also said that we must change course to make employee benefits more sustainable. And to lead that change, in the budget that I presented to the council, I have called for an increase in contributions for management confidential employees. These are the group of employees who are not covered by a union, and as a consequence of that, the mayor and the council can unilaterally change their contributions. I have proposed implementing a sliding income scale that I took from the school district. We propose that these employees pay between 10% and 25% of premiums based on their income level. This will impact about 161 employees. And while that's a small number of the employees, based on a full-time workforce of approximately 1,820 employees, it sets the all-important precedent for us as a city while we continue to negotiate with our partners in the unions. As I said before, we are going to start this, and it actually starts with me. So this is, I am at the upper end of the scale, and this is what it will look like for me. What's important in there, I think, is if you could look at the percentage increases. So when you talk about an annual contribution of $180, that's not a lot of money. But when you start looking at saying over 2 years to employees that you're going to pay 876% more for health care, that percentage is a hefty percentage. On top of the fact that there have been no pay increases other than those that we have legally had to under step increases. So we're asking these employees to pay dramatically more in proportion for their health care and yet not giving them pay increases. These are the kind of tough decisions that we are being asked to make and we are making in order to set us on a course of fiscal responsibility. The other significant part of the budget, of course, is the school district. And I am not going to get into the details of the school district budget this morning other than to call attention to a couple of highlights. As a result of our balancing economic development and provision of city services, we have seen a growth in our assessment this year of just under 1%. And that is, no pun intended, no doubt a minor increase in assessments. Nevertheless, in the face of what is going on across the country where assessed values are plummeting, particularly in cities like Yonkers, it is something that we're very proud of. In addition to which, we made the decision to structure the budget so that that percentage increase in assessed values would result in an increase to the school district of $523,000. This represents an additional $500,000 from what they received last year because of the assessment, and it's that increase we are giving to the school district and not putting any kind of stipulations on that money whatsoever. I said to the council on Monday night that this proves how when we work together to try to balance our needs and be fiscally responsible, how we can end up in a good place. And getting an additional $500,000 for the school district and an additional $300,000 for the city, relatively cost-free, is a good thing in a year when you see all of our other cities looking at plummeting values and facing financial collapse. I have also included in my budget a $1 million commitment for Say Yes to Education. I was glad to hear that Pat and Marianne will be here next week. They can talk to you about the specific achievements that we've been seeing in Say Yes. Let me just highlight a couple of them. We have seen 5,100 students are enrolled in the Say Yes after school programs, and approximately 2,200 students will attend the Say Yes to summer camps this year. Importantly, our ninth grade dropout rates decreased by 44% from 2009 to 2010. And our ninth grade algebra Regents exams passing rates went up by more than 30% this year as well. While we have our short-term spin-up aid, the superintendent also requested that I authorize the school district to use what is called New York State Chapter 1 accruals in the amount of $25 million. It is effectively a loan that other cities in New York, other of the big five cities, in particular Yonkers in New York City, have been utilizing for a while. This one-time shot will be essential to help alleviating the district's funding gap this year, but nevertheless, the district, similar to the city of Syracuse, will be in a very tough position again next year. There are a couple of other key elements that in the budget, too. Budgets are documents where you get to highlight your priorities along with making the tough fiscal fiscally responsible decisions that are necessary. This year, in addition to our growth in assessment, we saw some other good news in terms of revenue. For the first time, we put in our budget the $500,000 from our shared services agreement with Syracuse University. Although last year we did, I want to make sure because I know that there, wherever two are gathered, there's always somebody from Syracuse University here. So we did receive our first installment of that $500,000 last year. This is the first year we put it in the budget because it was agreed to after the budget last year. We have seen a $200,000 increase in our building permit fees, which reflects, I think, all the building that you're seeing going around in the city and the cranes in the air, as the colloquial phrase goes. An additional $2.6 million in increased pilot payments, which also reflects more building going on and more economic development. We will realize a nearly $2 million savings at the airport for the first time as the airport authority privatizes the airport security agreement. And we have put in $275,000 for the issue of emerald ash borer, which is a plague that all of those people who are involved in trees and greening and parks run around with their hair on fire about. So we are starting that. So I know that this is a group that would much prefer to ask questions than to hear me drone on. I want to conclude with just the following thought. I have said many times before that we Syracusans are a hearty group. Normally I do that when the weather is terrible. The weather this year was not terrible, and in fact it's been so freakish that I have a hard time remembering whether it's the spring or fall. But now that the budget's here, I know it's the spring. We will get through this and thrive if we are leaders and if we act responsibly. And acting responsibly means sometimes having to say no to things that you desperately want to say yes to, but you understand are not in your short-term or even long-term interest. I said to the governor 2 weeks ago that I felt deeply that the city of Syracuse is right on the precipice of really getting to great places. While other economies are declining, ours is growing. While other cities upstate have lost population, we have stabilized. But in order to continue that momentum, we need to have help and we need to make sure that we make the right kind of fiscally sustainable and responsible decisions. And ultimately, as a democracy, that rests in all of our collective hands. And I have every faith and belief and will advocate strongly to make that happen as we move forward through this year and into next. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Miner.
Again, I start off with two quick questions. The first has to do with the $25 million for the school district, which is a loan, but it's for operational expenses. And any time that you, it's a very poor move to borrow money to pay everyday expenses. And I'll leave it with that. The second is small potatoes, but we learned from the legislative chair of the county that the part-time county legislators have health insurance paid, and they were paying something like 4%, or maybe it's up to 8%. Do the common counselors, our part-time people who are in the city administration, do they receive a full health care premium support?
They can opt in if they want to. Now, actually, the exception to this would be city councilors, because while they are part-time, the law considers them full-time, and so they have the option. Actually, it's not just all elected officials and legislatures. So your town councilmen, your county legislators, they all, as far as I know, have the option to opt into the healthcare benefits. This will change that, so this will increase their costs as well, because they would fall under management confidential. And the second, let me answer your first question about the, you know, $25 million and it's a loan, it's for operating expenses. I think you could say the same about SpinUp. Oh, it's, you know, it's not good. It's not fiscally responsible. Some would argue that pension costs are an operating cost, and we should just pay it. We're now at a place where you have to say, well, frankly, I think we've always been. But really, what's the practical alternative? Can the school district cut $25 million out of their budget? I don't think they can. And I know the superintendent doesn't think that they can do it. So if your goal, and our goal is, and I can speak for the superintendent on this, is to try to minimize the harm that these desperate fiscal straits are putting us in, then we're going to look for these short-term fixes and say we've got to fix the long-term problem as well. So we're going to buy a year to try to figure out what the long-term solution is and to be part of that. We're not throwing up our hands. I'm not throwing up my hands and saying, you know, state, take over this issue. But at the same time, I think it would be irresponsible to not accept the spin-up, to then have to totally decimate our fund balance, have our bonding go down, have to lay off employees, have to pay more to buy fire trucks and classrooms and all of that. Is that a real possibility? Sure is, next year. But give me another year to work with people across the state and the governor and give us another chance to try to figure something out.
Ms. Mayor, I have a question regarding sales tax revenue. Do you anticipate once and if and when Destiny USA gets fully operational, whether that will increase your sales tax revenue, and is that in the budget?
We take our sales tax numbers directly from the county, and our revenue numbers, when I became mayor and put together my first budget, I made it very clear to my administration and also to the council that the revenue numbers that are in there were real. They weren't made up. They weren't, you know, they weren't goosed at all. So the revenue numbers that we have based on sales tax are taken directly from the county. Their numbers, their assessments, what they think is going to happen with the interest rate. And we've had modest growth in sales tax. I don't know, to answer your question, about if it will be appreciably bigger. I don't. There are some people who say most of our sales tax comes from large purchases, cars, boats, things like that, things that you wouldn't get at a mall. There are others who say, you know, that it's the largest shopping area within the county, so that's what's getting most of our, what's producing most of our sales tax. The way that the sales tax is collected and how it is put together, it is very difficult to make an educated assessment of whether or not the production of Destiny will have an appreciable increase on that. So the answer to your question is it's not included in the budget because I don't believe it's included in the county's assessment of sales tax numbers, and that's where we get our sales tax number from.
Good morning, Mayor. Thank you for bringing such clarity to this issue. What I want to know is, speaking about the control board, I know that you're going to be negotiating with a number of city labor unions, some of whom may be reluctant to increase the cost to them of the benefits. Can you speak to us about what it means if the control board comes in? What will it mean to employees, and what will it mean to city residents?
Well, each control boards in New York State are tailored to the individual municipality that is having them implemented. So, for example, right now Nassau County has one, and the city of Buffalo has one, but they're different, because the county is obviously different from a city. What all financial control boards in New York State have shared is that they vitiate or abrogate the collective bargaining agreements. So pay increases or wages and benefits or your health care scale, all of those things that you agreed to or part of a contract, go by the wayside. So in Buffalo, they went for 6 or 7 years without a pay increase. And in other places, they have said you have to, shred the workforce by 35%. So, for example, if we were to have layoffs right now, then the collective bargaining agreements dictate how you can lay people off. Under the, the basic concept is, last hired, first fired. Sometimes, there's equity in that, and I understand as a former labor lawyer why you would do that. But in terms of providing city services, that somewhat is a deterrent because those people who are last in are frequently the ones who are providing the services on the street that you're most interested in terms of quality of life. So what I have shared with the unions is that their role in dictating or agreeing to terms and conditions of terms and conditions of employment would no longer be relevant. So they would, if somebody has a grievance, they would represent them in that grievance proceeding and they would move through that. In terms of how it would impact residents of the city, I think as a philosophical matter that any time that you have a board that is unelected, they are going to be less responsive. And they will have an impact on decisions. Make no mistake about it. Policy is not separate from money. It's one and the same. And so anytime you're making decisions that impact money, you're making policy decisions. I don't know, but there would be an impact, and I think it would not be the way democracy should flourish and exist. But by the same token, what I have seen other municipalities who have been on this road to insolvency, the closer you get to insolvency, the worse the decisions are. And so at that point, elected officials, being creatures of survival like anybody else, start making completely irresponsible, foolish decisions, saying, suckers, I'm going to be out of here in 2 years and nobody's going to care. So in Newburgh, for example, they couldn't figure out how much money they had. They knew the bureaucrats are saying, we don't think you have enough money, and the elected officials voted for a pay increase for the police anyway. Those are the kind of things. So it's kind of akin to you can make people take bad medicine. You can make people get chemotherapy, but you can't make people kill themselves. And so at this point, I think we're between the take your bad medicine and chemotherapy, but the longer it goes, the more we are going to be saying to elected leaders, including union representatives, you're going to have to, the end of your career will seriously be a serious possibility of these decisions that you make. I'm trying to stave that off because at that point the whole system breaks down.
Two-part question about the balance sheet, the budget. You're trying to, of course, control expenses and also in all times trying to increase revenue. On the expenses side, you and the county executive have had some luck in coming to agreements on consolidating city and county services, and can you tell us how that is going and whether there are any more of those sorts of steps planned? On the revenue side, can you give us a quick summary of economic development strategy that is trying to get us to the place we want to be?
Well, let me say on the expenditure side, pensions and health care make up 80% of our budget. The county executive, I think, would tell you that pensions are a problem for the county and health care too, although not to the extent that they are a problem for the city yet. So when you talk about expenses and can you work with the county or can you consolidate it, they're not going to take over our pensions and they're not going to take over our health care. So now then you start saying, okay, what about services? And we have, we have a joint economic development office. We've merged our purchasing office. There are other potential avenues too, but I would caution you that remember that the areas of service that the city provides are distinct and wholly different for the most part than the areas of service that the county provides. We don't provide social services. That is exclusively a county responsibility and makes up the vast majority of their mission. So, okay, there's a county sheriff's office and there's a city police department. Could there be a metropolitan police department, a metropolitan fire department? Well, I've been talking about that for years. I've been talking about it. Nobody's ever come up to me and said, that's a great idea, Mayor. I'll keep talking about it, you know. So, and on the revenue side, I think the revenue side, you have seen us take very big steps to work as a region in terms of our economic development strategies. We've seen that be very successful this year in particular with getting the award from the state and all of the grants. I think you've seen that, you know, the proof is in the pudding. When you leave here and you look towards the city, look at all the cranes in the air and all the expansion going on, and there's a lot of good things. But as I have said to people, elected officials in particular in the state, and they say, oh, you know, we want to do something, we want to help this, you know, i.e. we want a photo op. I say, look, you can do all of this stuff. But if I can't plow the streets, then really what good does it make? If the mayor of the city of Syracuse doesn't have enough money to buy snowplows and plow the streets, then all of this stuff that you do, these Christmas presents of economic development and grants and this is all meaningless. Because fundamentally what people who believe in the free market want are services that they can depend on and that they know what the costs are going to be.
Good morning, Stephanie. Consolidation, modernizing government is always a big buzzword. But on the local level, you did an interesting attack on the codes department as far as making them join the 21st century. What department is next, and will that lead to any savings in the city?
I think in the long term, it will lead to savings. We are really trying to invest in technology. The problem is that that's you have to put an upfront investment, and then you have to have the expertise that runs that technology. So our codes department, we have new software that we have implemented, has been very successful. We're still working out some bugs in it. We're going to expand that to building permits so that people can go and check online or apply online eventually. So eventually our hope is to have an economic development structure and people who need the city's permission right online, which is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, along with a complaint structure that's available now. The problem in implementing that is that you need that upfront investment. Well, we don't have a lot of upfront money to do that. Then on top of that, you need the upfront expertise to do that. And we have a civil service code that is outdated. So they have positions like typist 1 and typist 2. When have you ever seen a typist 1 or a typist 2 in the modern workplace? So when you're saying, well, I need somebody who's got expertise in PeopleSoft who can help us do this and knows cloud computing, and you say, I want to hire this person, and the civil service people in your personnel department says, well, you better be careful. I don't know. You know, it's not in this job description. It's not in that job description. And maybe you got to create it, but then you got to abolish it. And if you do that, you got issues with your unions. So we are handcuffed by an old, outdated system. Now, we're creative, and we're figuring out ways, and we have figured out ways to deal with that. But the bigger the projects get, the more complex it gets. We believe and we see that there's an opportunity for our payroll system to go to PeopleSoft or something else. But to get the kind of manpower, intellectual firepower, and then buy that expertise to do it in these kind of times is very daunting. Now, if the county can do it, and perhaps maybe there's an opportunity for us to do it with the county, but I know if they came to me first, I'd say, hey, wait a second, I'm not so sure. I've got this figured out. The last thing I need to do is to increase my workload by double. So those are some of the things that we're thinking about moving forward.
Stephanie, Maureen Green had an article in the paper, I don't know, a month or so ago on parking downtown. And it really hit home, and I swore I would never come downtown again at night and park. And unfortunately, we're having a rehearsal dinner downtown, and I'm against it because of the parking.
I guess you're in favor of the wedding, though.
Yeah, I am, in the suburbs. But the parking, because your parking is very poorly marked.
And I went through and took pictures of every block and sent it to the judge. I lost, and I'd certainly not rather pay $35 than spend 2 hours going downtown and fighting it. But you have parking signs on a corner and maybe far on another corner, and it's no parking between these two signs. You need a sign in the middle. If you pass the corner, find a parking space, there's no place to tell you not to park. And I think there isn't enough parking downtown.
You are not alone. We hear that quite a bit. And we clearly have a Byzantine system that needs to be cleaned up and made more efficient, and we're working on that. I think the answer, too, is to have our garages open more than they are, and we are also working on that. And, you know, all of these problems, what seems simple at first becomes an incredibly complex problem the more you dig into it. But to answer your question, we are working on making our parking more understandable. We're working on making our garages open later than they are so that we can have more people down there. And let me tell you what I say to myself when we hear these complaints. As a mayor, when you pick your poison, I'd much rather hear complaints about lack of parking than some of the other complaints that I hear about. So rest assured, we are working on that, although I will say that a part of Maureen's article, which I thought was very provocative in a very good way and interesting, but I'm not in favor of tearing down buildings to put surface parking lots on. So.
Mayor, you've now been in office for 3 years, so it's kind of a personal question. I'm just curious, during those 3 years, what you would mark as perhaps the best moment, a highlight, and the worst?
You know, the great thing about this job, and there are a lot of great things about this job, is that it changes so dramatically. You wake up in the morning expecting it to go one way, and it never does. And that challenge, the fact that it's so interesting. So when you say what's the best, I could tell you this afternoon at 3 o'clock could be the best. I mean, it just, I just know it's there. And recently I was sitting down with some of my staff and we were talking about things and sort of reminiscing, if you will, and I was like, oh, man, I forgot that that happened. I forgot that that happened. So there have been a lot of very good things that have happened. And personally, the warmth that people have shared with me has been just, it's been life-altering, and I consider it a real privilege to hold this job. And every morning I consider it a real privilege. I think as I walk in past all the, there's pictures in City Hall of all the mayors, and I walk in and I always walk by, my picture is last, and I look at it, and I say this to people, my first thought is, what is my mother doing on the wall? And then I realize it's not my mother, it's me, and I think, man, this is pretty fantastic. It's pretty fantastic. You know, I think it's the sort of the humor of it, too. Being the first woman mayor of a Big Five city in New York, there's not a lot of people, obviously, who look like me. And I frequently go to places, and they assume that it's not me or somebody else. And that happens outside of Syracuse. In Syracuse, what generally happens is they call me Joni, and I say, that's great. Sometimes, though, other things happen, and I'll give you just kind of this sort of weird world that you enter into. So last year about this time, I decided I was going to buy my husband an iPad. He wanted an iPad. Couldn't order it off the Internet. No. Have to go and buy the iPad. So I go to the Carousel store, and it's got to be a certain one. It's got to be black, and it has to have Verizon hookup. All of you who are married know how important it is to compromise and to get these things. So I'm in the store, and I'm talking with this guy, and we're at the table where he's setting it up. And I say to him, yeah, I have an iPad. I've been trying to use it for work. And he says, oh, really? What do you do? And I said, I work for the city of Syracuse. And for any of you who've been in the Apple Store, you know at the table that they work at, there's always lots of people around. And I noticed at that point, everybody looks up. And he says, really, you know, last month, the mayor, the city came in. She bought a MacBook Pro. I said, really? He said, yeah, we're all really excited about it. And I said to him, well, was she tall? And he looked at me and he said, no. I said, well, was she good looking? And he looked at me and he said, no, I don't really remember what she looked like. They didn't tell me what she looked like. And I said, that's because she looks a lot like me. And he said to me, oh, I just moved here. I was from Binghamton. And everybody on the table started laughing and said, we can't believe you didn't know who she was. So I have these kind of out-of-body experiences like that happened to me that make for great fodder, make for very, very great fodder. One other one I'll tell you, I used to think, as I just said to you, maybe it's because I'm a woman and there's not a lot of women mayors of big five cities. Maybe it's because I'm short. Maybe it's because I used to be a lot younger looking than I am now, having been mayor for 3 years. Or maybe it's because I don't generally travel with a large entourage. There's all these different reasons. I have a badge that says mayor, and on the other side, I have an ID. It says, you know, Stephanie Miner, mayor. I had to go down to New York City to meet with the Canal Corporation, the Thruway Authority Board, to say to them to transfer the Inner Harbor land to the city of Syracuse. Running late, and I run in the door, and there's a security guard right there. It's at the MTA building, and there's an elevator right there, and it's open. And I show the guy my badge, and I show him my ID, and I said, I'm here for the Thruway Authority meeting. He looks at it, he looks at me, he says, is the mayor with you? And I said, yeah, that picture, that's me. I'm the mayor. He's, oh, my God, I'm so embarrassed. I'm so sorry. And they usher me in. So we have great laughs. Every day I laugh in this job. Every day I feel like we have the opportunity to do good things for people and to help people. And that's a very powerful feeling. And so every day I feel like it's a privilege. And every day has the opportunity to be the best day of my tenure. So thank you all very much.
All right, we do have time for a few more questions.
If strict you guys are about time, I didn't want to be...
That was a good place to end, but we're not going to end there. It's like being mayor. It doesn't end.
Okay. I'm sorry to bring you back to not a laughing matter, but I'd like your thoughts on what's driving those contributions that Albany's demanding to the pension fund. Is it poor management of the fund? Is it the fact that interest rates have been constantly coming down and therefore the unfunded future liability is more? What's behind that, and would a turn upward in the interest rate structure help?
It would get better. There's a series of things. The first is these benefits have become very expensive. The second is that the interest rate that the comptrollers put on what the pension fund would make were not accurate. And once you lose that 1 year, so if you say it's going to make 8% and it doesn't, the next year through the rules of compound interest, you almost have to double that. Well, we had years where the Wall Street went to negative growth. And so in order to, you know, you could have said 8%, now all of a sudden it's got to make 34%, which would have been actuarially wise. But of course, then you had actuaries come in and say, you know, the whole history of the market, despite what Keynes says, in the long run, you know, you're going to grow yourself out of this, and we just got to do a little bit. Well, as benefits became more expensive, people lived longer, the market did not come back with the kind of roaring steam that people thought it would be, and we went into a recession. It just exacerbated all of these problems. And also, unlike the private sector, most people in these benefit funds and these pension funds ceased making contributions in the 80s. So there's no contributions to it.
Mayor, this wonderful winter was great for all of us. What about the savings to the city in terms of snow plows, snow removal, and sand and salt?
Remember how I said everything is not always as simple as it seems? So we did. We saved over $1 million, but then gas went up to $4. And we are an organization that is driven by gas, police cars, fire trucks, DPW vehicles. So we saved on salt and overtime and personnel, but when gas went up to $4, that ate away a lot of it. And, you know, that's the kind of balancing that you do. And so the other part of it is, okay, so gas goes up to $4, but we're still savings. Well, guess what? Now we have to cut all this grass, too, that grows when... So now the grass has started growing in February instead of May. That adds another extra 2 months. So there's never a windfall in the city of Syracuse.
All right. We'll let you go on that one, then.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.